early morning North Korean rocket launch ends quickly. It's Thursday, March 23rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Be sure to join us as well online on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the security of Asia, how a U.S. oil company got involved in a Cambodian murder case, plus the cost of going solar for your home. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States and South Korea say a North Korean missile test on Wednesday ended in failure. VOA's Steve Miller joins me to discuss more about this apparently failed test.
Right. So the Associated Press on Tuesday evening here in Washington released a report saying that an unnamed U.S. military official said it was increasing surveillance over the eastern portion of North Korea, seeing vehicles move, and they suspected that a test would be seen sometime soon. And sure enough, Wednesday morning, there was a launch, and it appeared the missile had exploded shortly after liftoff. And South Korean and United States officials haven't released any information as to what kind of missile it was or what kind of engine was used. They're still analyzing the data.
It comes following several other missile launches that North Korea has conducted. It seems like this activity is increasing at a far faster pace than has in the past.
And we've seen that throughout the last year or so. A number of ballistic missile tests in 2016, the two nuclear tests, the four ballistic missiles that were launched earlier this month during the joint military exercises between South Korea and the United States are something that is typically seen, but we are seeing a faster increase. The engine test this past weekend was also another sign of that, where analysts believe that this may be a first successful test of a solid rocket engine that could one day power an ICBM as well.
North Korea did successfully launch a satellite into orbit. Using a larger rocket. And this has been the thrust of their goal, is to have an intercontinental ballistic missile that could potentially reach as far as the mainland of the United States.
Correct. And speaking to Reuters News in Geneva, Choi Myung-nam said that the North Korean military and the North Korean government will actively pursue an acceleration of its nuclear and missile programs, regardless of sanctions placed on the United States and by other entities as well.
We also had earlier this month North Korea firing some ballistic missiles into the sea off of Japan in their economic zone. And all this kind of comes along the deployment of THAAD in South Korea, the Terminal High Altitude Defense Missile System that the United States is putting in place. North Korea is seemingly challenging this advancement in U.S. defense of South Korea and Japan.
Correct. And the United States and the South Korean government have been very vocal, saying that the deployment of THAAD is in direct response to the provocative actions of North Korea.
It complicates a little bit the dynamics with China, because the United States has always looked at China to rein in Pyongyang in these issues. And China, vocally opposed to THAAD, may not have as much resolve to deal with Pyongyang.
And several analysts have also come out and said that one of the reasons that perhaps things have escalated this far is because China hasn't exerted as much pressure as perhaps Washington will have wanted.
Economic sanctions have not had much impact on Pyongyang. It has found many ways to gather the money it needs to do these sorts of activities. With Donald Trump's tough rhetoric, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in the region just this past week, there has been some talk about perhaps toughening the stance against North Korea. What that may mean, we don't know, but the military option appears to be more on the table than it has been in the past.
Right, and that's a common phrase that has been echoed by the State Department and the administration. All options are being reviewed as the Trump administration is currently examining and developing its North Korean policy. Several analysts are waiting to see what that policy is, to see how things may move forward. And China has repeatedly said that they hope that caution is one of the things that is exhibited, because they don't want to see the region spiral out of control and escalate into a quote-unquote state of war.
Several developments on several fronts of this story. Steve Miller is keeping track of everything. Thank you so much, Steve.
My pleasure.
These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. China angers Philippine president with reported plan to build in disputed sea. Afghanistan wants more U.S. help in fight against the Taliban and Islamic State. Conflict and diplomacy on the high seas. Earthquake hits Indonesia's Bali Island, no casualties reported. Beijing's anti-THAAD moves sour China views in South Korea. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. As VOA Asia continues, Southeast Asia, seeking a long-term agreement to settle disputes in the South China Sea, faces new challenges as China moves to extend its regional influence with plans for scientific stations on islets close to the Philippines. The concerns come as analysts say U.S.-Asia policy is currently focused on rising tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, who is currently chairman of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, this week held talks with regional partners Myanmar and Thailand. ASEAN's longtime goal has been to press ahead with implementation of a 2002 Declaration on the Conduct of Parties in the South China Sea, or a Code of Conduct. But Beijing has long resisted completing a legally binding code, leading to divisions within ASEAN. However, China is to host a meeting of ASEAN in May on the Code of Conduct framework, with diplomats hoping on progress towards a legally binding document to manage regional disputes. Some analysts say President Donald Trump's administration is preoccupied with tensions on the Korean Peninsula, where North Korea has been testing rockets. Carl Thayer, a defense analyst at Australia University of New South Wales, said Washington's attention has shifted away from the South China Sea issue.
I think the South China Sea has just been lost. I mean, it's just not on the radar. It is there, but it's like a pot that's been put on a burner and the heat's been turned down. And everybody else looking at not having a fire in the main cooking pan, frankly. And that's North Korea.
Analysts say uncertainties over the U.S. policy towards the South China Sea and a comprehensive strategy for Asia generally has enabled China to adopt a stronger position to its claims in the region. James Chin, director of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania, said the uncertainties over the U.S. policy have led to disappointment within ASEAN.
So now they think that there's going to be a stalemate, and people are thinking that the Americans are only worried about North Korea and North Korean crisis. So now all bets are off. The problem with this approach is that the longer you leave South China Sea alone, it means you give more time for the Chinese to keep building military bases.
Chin adds that once China builds on reclaimed land on the Scarborough Shoal, it, quote, means that they'll have de facto control over the South China Sea. Thayer said a Chinese airfield on the shoal would be strategically significant, completing a triangle linking Woody Island in the Paracels, the occupied features in the Spratly Islands, giving China the ability to monitor all aircraft and surface ships passing over or through the South China Sea. China claims much of the South China Sea through the so-called Nine Dash Line that extends near Malaysia, Brunei, the Philippines, and Vietnam. Happening now in Asia, the Philippines has asked China to clarify its reported plans to build on the disputed Scarborough Shoal. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte says he wants a peaceful resolution, but will act to protect national interests. China's foreign ministry denied any plans to build. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're very happy to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. This week, Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen said the island will be building its own submarines to replace its tiny, antiquated fleet and to help counter a growing military threat from China. She said strengthening Taiwan's underwater combat capabilities is most needed. She said under the strategic principle of effective and multi-layered deterrence, underwater combat readiness is part of Taiwan's defense that needs the most support. She said that it's a problem that was not solved in the past, and she is determined to do so. Taiwan shipbuilder CSBS Corporation was awarded a contract for the subs and will be working with the Navy and the Chungshan Institute of Science and Technology. Her announcement comes just weeks before a scheduled U.S.-China summit in Florida. Monash University Taiwan expert Bruce Jacobs tells VOA's Victor Beatty that such technology is difficult to master.
Taiwan had two World War II submarines, and it had two built by the Dutch from about 1980. Building submarines seems to be very difficult technologically, and building them quietly with capabilities is even more difficult. And Taiwan doesn't have any experience with this. Under the George Bush administration, there was a promise to build 8 diesel submarines for Taiwan and sell them to Taiwan. But this was stopped for two reasons. One, politically, the then opposition Kuomintang opposed it, said they didn't support it because there had been a referendum which they distorted. And also, the U.S., even though they promised to build diesel submarines, the U.S. doesn't build diesel submarines for itself anymore and apparently doesn't have the capabilities. And no arrangements were made with other countries to build submarines. So this has all been in abeyance. And a number of countries have been approached by Taiwan, but to my understanding is none of them have been willing to build them for Taiwan for fear that this would cause huge problems with China.
What countries possibly would provide the foreign technology needed?
The key three places which were tending for Australia were Germany, France, and Japan.
Doesn't Taiwan rely largely on the U.S. for its defense?
It does, but it also has quite a substantial indigenous military capability. And I think that's certainly important. If China was to invade Taiwan, it would certainly be important that Taiwan could hold off for a period of time.
How is Taiwan looking at this pending summit between the U.S. and China?
I think it will be looking with some concern. One of the problems is that what President Trump actually believes and what he will implement, I think, is still very unclear to most people who are sort of trying to figure out what will happen. In some ways, he seems to be arguing there need to be major changes, and on the other hand, there's certain continuities with the past. So I think there's just concern for what President Trump might do. On one hand, he took the phone call from President Tsai Ing-wen from Taiwan, and on the other hand, he has on occasion suggested that Taiwan might be a bargaining chip in some deal between the U.S. and China. So it's just not clear what he's planning to do.
According to media reports, the process of building the 1,200 to 3,000-ton diesel-electric submarines will take about 10 years, 4 to design, 4 for construction, 2 for testing. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The South Korean government says it will move forward with a plan to raise the sunken Sewol ferry. The vessel sank almost 3 years ago. It killed more than 300 people, mostly students. 9 passengers remain missing. It's hoped this effort will locate them. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. A U.S. court has extended the deadline for oil giant Chevron to appeal a court decision ordering it to release security camera footage from the gas station in Phnom Penh, where a Cambodian political analyst, Kem Lee, was killed last year. Ut Yang was put on trial for Lee's murder on March 1st, and an edited version was shown in court. But it raised more questions as the camera footage seemed to jump from one point to the next. That led former Cambodian opposition leader Sam Rainsy to try to get an unedited version. VOA Asia's Steve Miller spoke with Khmer Service reporter Kim Sing-min to get the latest update.
Chevron is a United States oil company. How did a request for this unedited security camera footage that took place at a gas station in Phnom Penh, how did this end up in the United States courts?
That's a very interesting question. And that's why some people say the murder was committed in Cambodia, but the mystery led up to a court in California, USA. Based on a U.S. statute, it's called Section 1782 Discovery. And it's very simple, according to legal expert. It says that if an American company is involved in a legal proceeding outside the U.S., say like Cambodia, a litigant can apply to an American court for evidence that could be used in that proceeding. And in that case, the gas station where Campbell was killed is a subsidiary of Chevron, and Chevron is based in the U.S.
So now that a United States court has extended the deadline for Chevron to produce this video, what can you share about what's happening next?
The decision initially gave Chevron until March 13 to release the video. But just last week when the deadline was reached, Judge Donna Rio made another order giving more time to Chevron until end of this month, March 31, based on the reason that the two parties, the lawyer for Sam Rainsy and also the lawyer for the company, are now talking to each other, trying to find a way to get around that without the court intervening. Initially, Chevron said the memory card from the CCTV was taken by the police and they don't have it anymore. But Sam Rainsy's lawyer did not ask only the video on that day, on the day that Campbell was killed. They also asked for video 10 days before that, you know, all the 10 days because they want to connect if someone or from the government is involved in the killing. Because if the killer want to kill someone at that spot, which is frequent by Campbell when he was alive, the killer might have already, you know,
so they're saying if someone had cased out the environment to kind of position where they would be most effective to carry out an alleged murder.
Exactly, yes.
From our Khmer service here at Voice of America, we have Kim Sang-men. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve, for having me.
Developing at this hour in Asia, former South Korean President Park Geun-hye was questioned for nearly 22 hours at the Seoul prosecutor's offices. She was questioned in an investigation into a corruption scandal that led to her impeachment. Park did not speak to reporters before getting in a car and going home. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the cost for individual homes to go solar has dropped by more than 60% over the last decade. Those low costs helped to convince more than a million private homes to install solar panels. Now schools are beginning to get in on the benefits. Erica Celeste reports from Fremont, Indiana.
The people in the small northern Indiana town of Fremont have always relied on the sun to warm their fields and draw tourists to their lakes. Now Superintendent William Stitt says they're counting on it to power their schools.
The technology has advanced so far in the last couple of years that it's become more energy efficient, more cost effective for schools to get solar energy.
Construction of the solar project will cost $3 million. When finished, it will completely power the elementary, middle, and high school buildings. In fact, it may generate so much electricity that the school will be able to sell some back to the power company at a profit. The system will work through several 3,000 to 4,000 panel rows. They will be located in a special 2.5-hectare solar field behind the middle school. The district has to lease the equipment from the local power company for 20 years at a fixed rate. But Kim Quick, facility director, says even with that added cost, the school should save money because the panels should last for 40 years.
It's going to cost us approximately the same amount we're paying for utilities today. So that cost is never going to increase for the next 20 years. So if NIPSCO comes in next year and says, utilities, we want to have a 6% increase, and they approve it, we're going to still pay the same we're paying today 20 years from now.
In 20 years, the school district will own the equipment outright, meaning it won't pay anything for electricity. And since the panels are always on, Quick says the district will save additional money by banking the unused electricity that's generated when the school is not in session.
These work year-round. Even on a full moon, they will produce electricity.
Just 3% of the nation's 125,000 schools use some form of solar energy. While not all can use solar power cost-effectively, a recent report by the Solar Foundation found that 72,000 U.S. schools could save money with solar energy. They could install panels on their roofs or elevate a field of panels over a parking lot. Those innovations would save most schools an average of $1 million over 30 years. Going solar also offers schools an educational component. It offers teachers the opportunities to incorporate lessons in science, technology, engineering, and math into the curriculum. All three schools in the Fremont system will have a live display module that kids can visit daily to learn how much energy is being used and saved.
I'd love, you know, the community and the kids in 40 years to go, man, they made a great decision 40 years ago by creating this solar project.
If all goes according to plan, Fremont School District's new solar field will be up and running by midsummer. For VOA News, I'm Erica Celeste in Fremont, Indiana.
We hope the sun is shining wherever you happen to be listening. Thank you for joining us today on VOA Asia. And be sure to check us out on Facebook anytime you like. VOA Asia is the place to go. You know, our program is also a podcast. That's right. You can download it if you like and take VOA Asia with you throughout your day. Our director is Tracy Carter, our engineer Jim Harmon, and our managing editor is Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. We thank everyone for contributing to the program. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Human rights abuses continue to be a serious problem in Russia, according to the latest State Department Human Rights Report. The continuing occupation and so-called annexation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula affects the human rights situation significantly and negatively. The Russian government continued to train, equip, and supply pro-Russian forces in eastern Ukraine, who were joined by numerous fighters from Russia. Credible observers attributed thousands of civilian deaths and injuries, as well as widespread abuses, to Russian-backed separatists in Ukraine's Donbas region and to Russian occupation authorities in Crimea. Russian authorities also conducted politically motivated arrests, detentions, and trials of Ukrainian citizens in Russia, many of whom claimed to have been tortured. Human rights groups asserted that numerous Ukrainian citizens remained in Russia as political prisoners. Within Russia itself, authorities restricted citizens' ability to choose their government through free and fair elections, and increasingly instituted a range of measures to suppress dissent. The government of President Vladimir Putin passed repressive laws and selectively employed existing ones to harass, discredit, prosecute, imprison, detain, fine, and suppress individuals and organizations critical of the government. Amendments to anti-terrorism laws granted Russian authorities additional powers that were also used to suppress and harass activists and critics of Mr. Putin's policies. Authorities especially targeted individuals and organizations that professed support for the government of Ukraine or opposed the Russian government's activities in Ukraine. The Russian government continued to target civil society. According to the Human Rights Report, authorities further stymied the work of non-governmental organizations, or NGOs, through the Foreign Agents and Undesirable Foreign Organization laws. Authorities also significantly expanded the definition of political activities to bring more NGOs under the foreign agents category. Authorities began fining NGOs for not disclosing foreign agent status, while courts closed NGOs for violations involving the foreign agents list. Under the expanded definition of political activities, authorities added environmental and HIV prevention organizations to the list. Promoting human rights and democratic governance is a core element of U.S. foreign policy, said U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. The human rights reports demonstrate the United States' unwavering commitment to advancing liberty, human dignity, and global prosperity around the world, including in Russia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.